What does it mean to be truly educated?
Learning is a lifelong process, and curiosity about the world we live in and why we're here is something that we should embrace and encourage at every age. To carry that a little bit further, I believe that as we learn to recognize and embrace that each one of us is on a unique journey, we understand better that we're all part of something that is much greater than ourselves. It's not a linear process. That being said, I believe that when we can understand and accept ourselves in our present, we're in a position where we're more capable to learn from our past and then use our faith, our giftings, and our strengths to contribute toward a better future.
That's Karen Krecha. Karen is the founder of Autism Empowerment, a nonprofit organization that advocates for the autistic community.
Host of the Autism Empowerment podcast.
And the editor and columnist of Spectrum Life magazine.
Besides this, she is the mother of two boys on the autism spectrum and an autist herself.
Karen's vision of inclusion goes beyond the four walls of the school building.
She sees inclusion through the lens of community and uses her position to create more inclusive environments in the neighborhoods surrounding the school.
Welcome to season 3 of Beyond the Curriculum. I'm your host, Aaron Blackwelder, high school English teacher and co-founder of Teachers Going Gradeless.
And I'm Michelle Cottrell Williams, 2018 Virginia State Teacher of the Year, former high school history teacher, and current instructional coach at the middle school level.
In this season, we are looking at inclusion and how creating more inclusive environments provides spaces where all learners can thrive.
We will be learning from teachers and advocates who will help us gain perspective on what inclusion means and how educators can be intentional as they create more inclusive environments.
We'll find out about common barriers that prevent inclusion,
some ways inclusion is done well,
and how general education teachers can partner with both special education teachers and community members to take our learners beyond the curriculum.
As a parent and an advocate, how do you define inclusion? Why is it important for educators to intentionally build inclusive spaces?
Well, thank you for that question, Michelle. Personally, I define inclusion as where all people, and when I say all, I mean regardless of age or ability level, how much they make, socioeconomic status, race, ethnicity, religion, all of those identity-related demographics, where all people have the opportunity to actively participate, actively belong, and have opportunities to create and build meaningful experiences and relationships. And ideally, this would happen in an equitable way. For example, in a classroom setting, especially with younger students, it might look like coming into inclusion with the attitude that everyone can make a friend despite where they've come from, their current circumstances. Everyone can participate in a meaningful way, and everyone can be successful. And the definition of successful that I use is taking steps forward. Not everybody's going to be at the same place, but if we're taking steps forward, then I see that as successful.
Assumptions that everyone needs to have the same starting line and everyone should have the same finishing line, and that's just not a reality.
No, and it never will be because we're all coming into things from a different life experience. And I think it's so important for people to realize, educators, parents, everybody out there, that, and I'm looking at this from a disability lens, being an autistic advocate and a parent of two kids on the spectrum, is that disability is going to last a lifetime, at least these types of developmental disabilities. And models of inclusion and universal design, they need to start as early as possible. And we need to have people included as early as possible. We're going to be adults a lot longer than we're going to be kids. Mm-hmm. And I think that's essential. And universal design is such an important concept. And for your listeners out there who may not know, essentially what that means is it's a design and composition of an environment so that it can be accessed, understood, and used to the greatest extent possible by all people, regardless of their age, their size, their ability or disability. And it's essentially an environment, which could mean a building, a product, a piece of software or service that's designed to meet the needs of all people who wish to use that. And so I truly believe that inclusion and universal design benefit everyone. It's not just an ability disability thing. It benefits everyone, students, parents, educators, and society. And I think it promotes the celebration of similarities, both similarities and differences.
Yeah. Well, and I really appreciate, it struck me the way that you spoke specifically about giving kids the opportunity to actively belong. I think that can be really powerful for educators who are intentionally working on the inclusion in their classroom spaces, right? And asking themselves, like, what opportunities have I built in for students to actively belong in the classroom? I appreciate that. Thank you for wording it that way.
So Karen, we've been friends a long time, and I've known you as a parent. I've known you as the founder of Autism Empowerment. I'm curious, how do you promote more inclusion within your community? And what does that mean to promote inclusion within the community?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question, Aaron. And I think in order to answer your question, I want to give some context, a little bit of background, so that your listeners understand a little bit about where I'm coming from and what this journey has been, so that they better understand what it is we intend to be promoting in terms of inclusion in the community. So both of my children, who are now 14 and 21, they were diagnosed on the autism spectrum back in 2008. And I was actually diagnosed last in our family. I was diagnosed a short time later. But at the time, my youngest son, who was diagnosed first, his language had regressed. He wasn't speaking at the time, and he needed considerable support. But after he had his diagnosis, we only received a very short little pamphlet from the medical provider and an invitation to come back 6 weeks later if we have any questions. Now, that was not an ideal situation, but being a very curious person, and I suppose being as any good parent would want to do, I immersed myself into trying to figure out as much information as possible, what was out there, understanding these things. And unfortunately, and this was again back in 2008, I quickly tired of a lot of the doom and gloom and the negative messaging that was being promoted by a lot of different autism-related organizations. And it seemed like they were doing it in order to secure funding more than it was to provide support. There was a lot of really negative messaging and cure and fix and hopelessness. And I personally believe that messaging that stigmatizes youth and adults on the spectrum, it hurts self-esteem. And when I was hearing this and reading this, I just felt awful. And I figured this is not something I want my children to be able to hear or any children to be able to hear. It sends an incorrect message that children on the spectrum are to be excluded rather than included. Mm-hmm. And I was also disappointed to learn in terms of an inclusionary standpoint that very few autistic individuals were being actively included in significant leadership or advisory capacities within the organizations which were raising the most funds and having the most voice at the table, so to speak, in these conversations. And I didn't want my children to grow up in a world where they weren't accepted or respected. And I didn't want them to lose opportunities. And I didn't want anyone else's children to feel the same way. So my husband, John, and I founded Autism Empowerment on June 3rd, back in 2011. And we're actually going to be celebrating our 10-year anniversary next year, or in 2021. Wow. So to kind of answer your question, what we do is we promote inclusion by starting out on our website with our mission and vision statements. Autism Empowerment is a nonprofit 501c3 organization devoted to enriching and empowering the lives of youth, adults, and families within the autism community. And we do this through promoting a culture of autism acceptance, and we believe that each one of us has gifts and talents to share with the world. The vision that we work toward is an inclusive society that respects youth and adults on the spectrum, empowering each person to reach their highest potential and essentially live their most awesome life. Mm. And I think that, you know, to follow up with making sure that that's authentic, we made a decision early on that everyone on our board of directors or in key leadership roles would either identify as autistic or neurodiverse or would be family member of someone who was. Mm. We wanted to be authentic, proactive, passionate allies. And so when we were developing this and thinking, how are we going to create this vision of an inclusive society? How are we going to work towards that? We came up with four foundational pillars, and those are accept, enrich, inspire, and empower. And all of our programs were designed with those pillars promoting inclusion in mind. And one way to represent that is that all of our key volunteers have these shirts that say, Ambassador for Acceptance of All Abilities. And they've got the picture of kind of a globe that's a heart. And they're in our four colorful colors to match the pillars, green, red, orange, and purple. And it's just a messaging. And by calling people ambassadors for acceptance, it kind of makes people stop and take a moment to think, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. To be an ambassador, to be a positive representation of something. And so that's one way that we promote inclusion and show people how important it is that everyone, no matter what their ability level, matters. From a philosophical standpoint, we lead by example, and we take the position that we want to meet people where they're at, because everyone's going to be coming into the journey from a different standpoint. So we want to embrace people with grace and not join in any blame or shame game. Mm-hmm. And that means being proactive. It means being intentional. It means promoting and creating environments where learning, friendship, and relationships can truly and authentically flourish. And so the different programs that we have developed, I can list a few of them briefly, but all of them are developed with these types of concepts in mind. And one of them, and Aaron, you know a lot about this, you've been partnering with us with this for a while, is our Spectrum Life magazine. Mm-hmm. And that is a publication that currently reaches in over 500 distribution points. Not so many now. Right now, we're on hiatus because of the pandemic, but we'll be back again in January with our winter issue. But we have different columns within the magazine that include perspectives from self-advocates, parents and caregivers, and professionals in the educational, medical, and legal communities. And we believe that when you take content together with community, you can really provide connections. And so that's a big program, to be able to educate people about inclusion and other types of topics that are going to matter to them. Mm-hmm. And another thing that we're doing is we are relaunching our Autism Empowerment podcast. We originally had that back in 2012 to 2014 and did 125 shows. But then once the magazine came about, we realized we didn't have the time and bandwidth to do everything at mm-hmm. once. But this year has certainly provided a lot of opportunities to pivot and change. And we realize that, you know, we're going to bring that back. And so we're actually going to be launching this month. And we're super excited about that. And that's really exciting for us. And one other program I want to mention, and I know I'm just kind of talking a lot here, but I want to get this out there because it's super important. Mm-hmm. It's our Autism Serves Kids Care Club. And that is a volunteerism program. And a lot of times our kids, they're used to being recipients of services. They're used to going back and forth to appointments and sitting in on meetings and different types of things and learning what's wrong with them instead of what's right. And the Kids Care Club is an opportunity for our kids to show their gifts and strengths and to give of themselves back to other people. And the program includes kids on the spectrum, but also their brothers and sisters who are either neurodiverse or typically developing. It includes their parents. And then in a lot of cases, we're volunteering alongside other volunteer groups. We're volunteering on behalf of other nonprofits. And it just, you know, when you volunteer and can step outside of yourself, it really is a very empowering thing for self-esteem. It helps our kids become better citizens because they get knowledge of a lot of different issues that are important in our society. And it engages us in conversations with other people. They're not as, you know, sometimes people are a little bit shy or intimidated by approaching someone who is different than they are, mm-hmm. but our guards are kind of let down. So we're able to have conversations in a more meaningful way because we're partnering together to help someone else. Mm. So that's one of my more favorite programs. And we've done that for a number of years, and it helps build bridges. It builds bridges. And I think, unfortunately, within our community, there's a lot of divisiveness. Mm-hmm. And so we don't want to play into drama or toxicity. We want to be part of the solution that brings people together and invites people to the table to be able to have real discussions, real meaningful discussions. And so hopefully that's some information that can help share how our organization promotes inclusion.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
you guys have done a fantastic job, not only providing opportunities for artists, but also and their families, but more than opportunities just to meet or to gain services like you talked about, but also to find a place for themselves where they are contributing to the greater world and finding their place within that greater world where they have purpose and meaning. And you guys have done a beautiful job at that.
Thank you.
So, a lot of our listeners are educators. And so thinking about schools and communities, what are some barriers that both community members and teachers need to overcome to help build more inclusive environments?
That is such a good question. And I think really, first, hey, let's just learn together, all of us, mm-hmm. how to better step outside our own comfort zones and our limited life perspectives and listen to and embrace people who have different backgrounds and experiences from us, different identities. I think that being open to questions and being open to comments and feedback is essential. Mm-hmm. And I think when we can do this from a respectful way and coming at things from that place of grace, it can really open up the door for meaningful, valuable conversations. We don't need to be intimidated by one another. We all have something to contribute. So I think that, first of all, to break down barriers, we need to have that attitude of openness. And I think that we also need to be honest with ourselves and check on what some of our assumptions and biases might be. Mm-hmm. I think, like, specifically in terms of a disability lens about ableism, for those who may not be familiar, ableism is discrimination of and social prejudice that comes against people with disabilities, mm-hmm. essentially based on the belief that people who don't have disabilities are somehow in some way superior. Mm-hmm. Ableism has been ingrained in our culture for so long. And being autistic myself, I recognized some ableistic language that I had been using growing up and hearing certain things, not even realizing that it might be hurtful to someone else. So I think that all of us can learn and we can all listen to others. And I think, you know, there's a saying that's really common in the disability community, nothing about us without us, mm-hmm. meaning that if you're really going to authentically learn about a person from a particular culture or experience, you have to have that person at the table. Mm-hmm. And so I think that both community members and teachers need to include people in order to have those inclusive environments. And I think too that when we talk about things that might be painful or embarrassing, oh, that was an ableist comment. You know, I think we need to do it in a way that is educating versus shaming. Mm-hmm. And I think in our society, there's a lot of that shaming, and I think we can do better because I think that that just sets things up to have conflict if we're coming at people from a, you should have known this, you should have known better versus, hey, you know, I never know if you stopped to think about this, but, you know, saying some of these words could be really hurtful. Mm-hmm. And other things too, and this is something, again, specific more to the disability community, language. Mm-hmm. People first versus identity first is a really great example within the autistic community mm-hmm. culture. Mm-hmm. A lot of teachers and medical professionals have been taught and are in a lot of cases required, from my understanding, to use people first language, which would mean, for example, I am a person with autism versus I am an autistic person. Mm-hmm. And I think truly that the intention of everybody is good in terms of wanting to see someone as not their diagnosis, but as a human being. I don't think there's any problem with that. But the problem comes when it just comes out sounding kind of weird. So it feels to people like myself who identify as autistic that we're being separated from what we might feel to be our identity. Mm-hmm. And my views on this have changed over time because when I first was diagnosed, I thought autistic sounded kind of eh. You know, mm-hmm. I had people that were using it as bad language, you know, using it in a disparaging way. So I didn't really want to identify myself that way or my children. And yet, as I immersed myself more into conversations with autistic people who had embraced this identity for a while, I realized that this is part of who I am, and I'm okay with that, and I'm happy with that, and I'm willing to educate people on why I now choose to use that language. But at the same time, I think it's really important and essential for community members and teachers to embrace whatever choice someone might make regarding their own identity, being mindful that this could be fluid and that any point in time someone might change their opinion on that. Because quite frankly, a lot of kids who are bullied don't want to use that language. But sure. If they have it in a warm and accepting and welcoming environment and their peers are using it, they're going to be more apt to wanting to potentially use that type of language. So I think that both sides need to stop shaming each other and accusing each other of having it be one way, because it's not one way. The idea is to really show respect. And one thing I really do want to mention for educators and community members to understand is to presume competence. Mm-hmm. I think so many times, especially if people haven't had a whole lot of experience working with people who have disabilities that may on the front appear to be more severe, I think they mean well, but they're not necessarily sure how to react. Maybe they haven't had enough time or training, and they might be a little bit nervous around people with disabilities who may have aggressive behaviors or who may not speak. And I think it's really super important that we start out by presuming competence, because I have personally known and had conversations with enough people that would be considered nonverbal to know that they are incredibly intelligent mm-hmm. and that mm-hmm. we do not want to put this cap, this ceiling on people. We want to bring out the best in everyone. So I would say that is super important as well.
Yeah.
I have a couple of follow-up questions, sure. If that's okay. One, I guess this really makes the case, if you hadn't already made the case for inclusion in the classroom, this is just one more reason to open up classrooms to be inclusive to all students. Because I feel like as an adult, I've had to do so much like unlearning of the way that I was brought up and socialized into what I should consider normal. And if I had been brought up in classes where my classmates were fell all along the neurodiversity spectrum, right? That I wouldn't become an adult who feared working with people with disabilities because it was just normal to me. So I guess that's not really a question. That's just a comment.
it's an important one, yeah.
But my question is, when you were talking about having to educate others, I know that in a lot of communities, it feels like an emotional tax that people within the community have to pay if it's always their responsibility to educate people on their oppression. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering how people outside of the disability community can become better allies so that burden for educating others doesn't always fall on the autistic person to do.
That is such a good question. You know, I think to me, the people that are the best allies are ones that just genuinely want to get to know either my kids or myself or other people in the community, get to know them and find things that they have in common and, you know, kind of build on their similarities. And then when you can see the things that you have in common with other human beings, then it's a little bit easier when you start talking about differences. Mm-hmm. You have something where, you know, you have a base. We're all human. You know, we all, you know, have different things that we do. And like, we may have favorite foods or sleep patterns or music that we like, or, you know, passion, interest, whatever that might be. And I think being an ally is including people in conversations that are not about disability, that are about, you know, just interesting topics and faith and those types of things, if that's important to them. But I think it's also actively sharing when autistic people, you know, it would be really beneficial, I think, for us if people that were not autistic were sharing articles with one another. Mm. You know, if you saw something that was really interesting and helped you learn more about inclusion, to be able to share that and to be able to say, hey, you know, this was something I read that really made a difference to me and I wanted to share that. I think to your point and your comment that you made about having wished that perhaps you'd been in an environment before that had more neurodiversity in the classroom, it may have been easier later on. I think that that is one of the main reasons that inclusion needs to start in the classrooms at such a very young age, because our children's peers, they are going to be their allies for life. Yeah. As they grow up together, you know, they're going to be the ones that, you know, are hiring them for jobs, or they're hiring them the other way around, but they're going to be, you know, they're going to be together in sort of like a cohort, so to speak, you know, for their entire lives. And I remember when my oldest child was in elementary school, there was a kid who was on the spectrum as well, but was much more impacted in terms of language. Mm-hmm. And somebody was making fun of him in the lunchroom. And my child, who is very introverted and isn't one to speak up, spoke up and just said right away that that's not right. You don't do those things. Didn't take a bystander role and stood up. And I think that when we're having our kids included in the classrooms and we're seeing people who are different than we are, and it just isn't disability, it's race, ethnicity, what kind of home environment we came from, when we can stand up for each other and really genuinely do that in a way that shows respect, those types of relationships and friendships that can be built are going to last and they're going to make an impact.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if I'm really answering your question.
Oh, absolutely you are. Yeah.
But being a good ally, being a good person, being open, just being open to listening to people that are different than you and embracing that. Mm-hmm. And it makes our lives so much richer. Who wants to just be in a room with all the people that are like themselves?
Sure.
Yeah. So you lead into the next thing that I wanted to ask you about. And I think this is really important, is how have you seen inclusion done well? And what are some of the benefits that you've seen when schools and communities adopt a more inclusive environment?
I'm going to start, I think, with the last part of that question, because I think, well, it's kind of a combination. I think that the best programs that are out there are the ones that have inclusion so that you don't really say, hey, we're inclusive. It's, you know, they don't actively call attention to a person's disability or imply that volunteers are doing some sort of great favor or great act of humanity just by being a friend. Mm-hmm. I think the best programs, I want to clarify that. I think that by and large, people mean well, and when they participate in buddy type programs, they really do want to be a buddy. And it's usually not them that are portraying this like hero attitude. It's oftentimes it's picked up by media and it kind of crosses a line where it's like, wow, the cheerleader asked the guy with a disability to prom. And then it gets in the paper and then everybody sends it through social media and it's oh so inspiring. And that's what they call inspiration porn, and it's not at all inclusion. It's ick.
Yeah.
You know, it's just ick. So when I see inclusion done well, it's been in my kids' classrooms where everybody had a chance to participate in a meaningful way. As was talked about before, they're able to actively be there and make a contribution. You know, if there's a lesson about a particular topic, not every student in the class has to contribute at the same level, but we can all contribute something. And so when I see inclusion done well in classrooms and in other programs that my own children have been a part of, I see that they have increased self-esteem. They feel a lot better about going to class, about doing the assignments, about participating. And I think that, again, in those types of programs, you're also developing peers that are going to be advocates for their peers for years to come. Mm-hmm. And again, our children are going to be adults a lot longer than they're going to be children. And we need a community. We need a society that has allies and want to create accessible and inclusive spaces and want to create universal design. And I think when those experiences of inclusion are built in early in the classroom as you can have them, it just sets up a good positive, you know, pace for down the road. And I think that some of the other benefits are that you get that diversity in thinking. You get creative responses to questions that you might not get when everybody has a chance to contribute something. And I think it also provides deeper conversations. And when you have that, it opens the door for innovation and inventions and all sorts of different neat things. And it's life-changing for children and parents and teachers and community. And, you know, one of the greatest things I've seen in my own child's life, my youngest, was when he participated in a parks and recreation program, a teen summer camp. And I can tell you, the year before, we couldn't get him to go to camp. Mm-hmm. Would go once or twice, but then it would be called, he would feel embarrassed and called out because of his differences. And so he, you know, with so many of our kids, and I would say all kids, who wants to be embarrassed? Who wants to be embarrassed in front of their peers? And when you're starting to be in that young teenage, you're a little bit more self-aware in a lot of different cases. And so when he went into a program that was early teen through Parks and Rec, it was at Furstenberg, they had mentors there that just hung out with the kids, but didn't call attention to what their deficits were. They just helped them with their strengths. If there was something that needed to be taken care of, like it might be a good idea to maybe wear some deodorant, that type of topic, talked about in a private place, but the relationship before that point was built so that that conversation would be able to potentially happen. And it was a respect type of thing. So I think the best, when I see inclusion doing well or programs that are done well, it's coming from a place of love and respect and the golden rule. You treat your neighbor, you treat your friend, you treat the person, that you're with the way that you'd want to be treated. Mm. And the National Inclusion Project is a website that has a lot of really good resources for teachers or for people who are doing after school programs to learn about different ways to be able to include people at different age levels. And that's a good resource that can help people if they're not sure on what would be good ways to be able to, participate in that kind of way.
When inclusive spaces are created, both within the school and in the community, then we provide everyone the opportunity to belong. And when we belong, we can use our unique gifts to help build our community and make our world a better place. For more information about Karen, visit beyondthecurriculumpodcast.com and check out the show notes. In the next episode of Beyond the Curriculum, we will hear from Kimberly Eckert, the 2018 Louisiana State Teacher of the Year, 2020 ASCD Emerging Leader, 2020 Global Teacher Prize Finalist, 2019 NEA Social Justice Activist of the Year National Finalist, and a National Center for Learning Disabilities Expert Teacher. Kimberly will share how teachers can work with students to create more inclusive spaces in the classroom. If you enjoyed this program, be sure to hit the subscribe button as you will want to catch each and every episode. And remember to leave a rating and review. I appreciate your support and it helps others find the show. Beyond the Curriculum is part of the Teachers Going Gradeless Network. Please consider partnering with us through the TG2 Patreon page. Your donation will help offset the cost of producing this podcast and bring more meaningful opportunities that take learners beyond the curriculum. Thank you.